Miss Amaka Igwe could not be here with us. She was coming from Nigeria, and she was going to speak about the Nigerian film scene, the Nigerian film market. So she had problems with her visa. She could not get a visa to come into Germany. So unfortunately, she's not here with us. I was not planning to do a presentation myself, but it was only to be a very short presentation. But since Amaka is not coming, I expanded a little bit my presentation, and I will cover a little bit of the Nigerian film scene, because this is something that I've been working for such a long time now, and working also with Amaka and other producers in Nigeria. So I'll go first, and then I will ask you to bear with me, and I will introduce all of our panelists before they take on the stage. So I start. Okay, so the topic for this afternoon is open businesses. And I will start by telling you a story, then I'll give you some numbers, and then we'll talk about open business. The way I'd like to focus this is to think about the perspective of developing countries. So my story is basically about Brazil. In 2004, the number of illegal computers that were sold in Brazil. When I say illegal computers, it's because they are illegal, either because they have illegal software in it, or because they are assembled in small factories, small backyards, without any permission, without like components from everywhere. So it's like an unofficial market for computers. The number of those computers sold in 2004, oops, sorry for that, some problem here. Yeah. Represented basically 74% of all the computers sold in Brazil in 2004. In 2006, something changed. And for the first time in the Brazilian history, recent history especially, the number of illegal computers sold in the country dropped to below 50%. So 2006 is the first year in which we are selling more official computers than illegal ones in the country. So one might ask, why? What happened that we started like selling legal computers? Was it the law that changed? Was it like enforcement? The authorities actually got really good and started like repressing these activities? Was it like public morality? Like people became conscious that they should not buy illegal computers and should prefer the legal ones? And some sort of public consciousness as well. Like what happened that changed the face of the Brazilian PC market? The answer might be gotten from this guy, in which his campaign, he always had a very important sentence about how do you win an election, and the sentence was like, it's the economy, stupid. That means the computers in Brazil only changed from illegal to legal because of economic reasons. A legal computer now in Brazil costs approximately $927, but the important thing about it is that you can get financing, especially from the government, so it makes it really easy for you to buy a computer, a financed one. And that's the main reason for the legal computers rise. Just for you to know, an illegal computer still costs $800, so it's like cheaper than the official ones, but they do not have the financing structure that the legal ones have. So basically, the big change about legal to illegal was due to economic reasons. Okay, so that's the story. With that in mind, I would like to give you some numbers about the traditional ways for accessing knowledge in Brazil. These numbers reflect, to some extent, a crisis. If you think about the ways people used to access knowledge in the 20th century, all these means are facing a crisis in the developing countries. So take a look at this. If you think about the music industry, and this is happening everywhere, it's not only Brazil, but the majority of developing countries have figures that are very similar to the ones I'm going to show you. The largest Brazilian record label is Sony BMG. Sony BMG has in its cast, as of today, approximately 52 Brazilian artists. So you have like the largest record label, and the cast of the largest record label has 52 artists in it. In a recent interview given to one of the largest Brazilian newspapers, the president of Sony BMG said that they are going to drop this year approximately 40% of their cast. So by the end of the year, the largest Brazilian label will have approximately 28, 26 artists in its cast. And in the same interview, the president of Sony BMG also mentioned that for this year, their plans are to release 15 Brazilian music CDs. So the largest multinational label in Brazil is releasing 15 new music Brazilian CDs for 2006. So that conveys pretty much the situation about the official market of music in the country. Then think about press. Once again, take the largest Brazilian newspaper, which is Folha de São Paulo. It's the São Paulo-based newspaper. If you think about the daily circulation numbers for Folha de São Paulo in 2000, those were the figures. Then you have 2001, 2002, 2003, 2004, and then you have 2005. So you can see a very dramatic drop in the daily circulation rates. Of course, that might mean lots of things. It might mean that there's a change in the consumer habits. But it's something that you really have to take into account about how people are getting access to information and access to knowledge these days in developing countries. Also consider the idea of books. If you consider, for instance, bookstores as a way for people to get access to books, Brazil has today 1,800 bookstores, for a population of 1,806 million inhabitants. So this is a very low rate of bookstores per inhabitants. And one of the reasons for that, I just would like to give you the whole panorama about the situation, is that the government is the largest purchaser of textbooks. So there's a big division in the Brazilian market between textbooks and other sorts of books, for instance, literary works. So the government purchases books and distributes them for free for the public schools, books like this one of mathematics. And when the government buys that book, the government pays $2.20. At the same time, if you'd like to buy it in a bookstore, you would have to pay $28 for that. Just like this virtual bookstore demonstrates, it's been sold for 62 reais. Approximately $28. Is this good? Is this bad? Is this the right policy? I really don't know. That's not my point here. I just would like to tell you that there is no incentives for opening bookstores in Brazil. Like the majority of the Brazilian cities simply does not have any bookstores. So that's a point and something to think about when you think about access to knowledge. The other thing that is important to mention is films. I think it's nothing new for anyone here that Hollywood controls 85% of the world market, and the numbers are actually not different in Brazil. Some years Hollywood gets like 90%, some years Hollywood gets 85% of the Brazilian market. So if you think, for instance, once again in 2004, the number of movies released in Brazil was that. the revenues was that, and the number of Brazilian movies was that. Brazil released 51 movies in 2004. The top five box office, you can take a look, it doesn't have any Brazilian movies on it. And once again, Brazil has 1,800 movie theaters. In the 50s, Brazil used to have 4,500 movie theaters. Once again, it demonstrates that the habits of the consumers, of the public, are changing, but it also gives us something to think about this crisis, about the traditional means for accessing culture, accessing knowledge. Okay, so that's the end of the numbers part, and then we talk a little bit about open business. What I would like to give you the idea about the open business discussion is that actually there are two possibilities that we have to think about open business, especially when we are thinking about developing countries. The first possibility that I would like to call the legal commons can be exemplified by initiatives, for instance, Jamendo. We will have like Lohan here speaking about Jamendo. And if you take a look at the bottom of the page of Jamendo, you see that interesting thing, which is the Creative Commons button. That means that all the content in Jamendo is licensed under a Creative Commons license. But you can also go further away. You can look at the Public Library of Science, and you will also find the Creative Commons symbol at the PLOS website. And you can go to Brazil as well. You can go to the most important Brazilian news agency, which is Agência Brasil. And once again, in the bottom of the website, you see like the Creative Commons symbol. This is what I call the legal commons. And it's basically represented, for instance, by the usage of the Creative Commons license, so that if you are an author, you might have a business model in which sharing and authorizing people to use your content is part of your business model. So this is the first possibility for open business. The second possibility I would like to call the social commons. And that's where things get tricky. If you think about social commons, you have to think that in the majority of developing countries, intellectual property is a foreign idea. Intellectual property might find difficulties of enforcement, or you might find people simply do not caring at all about intellectual property, or you might find cultural reasons in which intellectual property is just an idea that does not make any sense or is irrelevant. And that's the reality of most of the developing world. What is interesting about the social commons idea is the fact that technology got to the world peripheries before intellectual property did. So one of the most exciting things about the world today is the way that the global peripheries are appropriating technology in order to create their own emerging and autonomous cultural industries that are based not in the legal commons. They do not use creative commons because they do not have to. As I told you, intellectual property is not a factor, but based in this idea of social commons in which you take it for granted that your content is going to be shared and that your content is going to be freely disseminated for all throughout all available means. And I would like to give you a couple of examples about this. The first one is a music scene that is taking place in the north of Brazil that is called Tecnobrega. Tecnobrega is written like that because it's a kind of derivative way of writing it in Portuguese. It's not with an age. It's a very interesting rhythm. It's a mix between very romantic, cheesy songs with 80s beats. So it's like the mix of electronica and like very cheesy romantic stuff. And people love it. And it's actually very good. I like it myself. So basically, if you go to the Tecnobrega scene in Pará, very poor state of Brazil, they release approximately 400 CDs every year, which is very different from the 15 that I mentioned from Sony BMG. And the interesting thing is, if you go to a store to buy one of those 400 CDs in Brazil, you won't find them at all, because these CDs are produced, recorded, and distributed directly to be sold by the street vendors. So the street vendors in Brazil are responsible for disseminating the entire production of the Tecnobrega CDs. You cannot find them in the stores. These are the same guys who might sell pirated stuff. And this is not piracy. This is being like deliberately given to them so that it can sell it. And the musicians and the entire productive chain does not make a cent out of selling CDs. That's not their business model. They're not into it for selling CDs. The way people make money in the Tecnobrega scene is through parties, is through the intensive use of technology that allows, for instance, live concerts to be recorded just in time. So when you leave the concert hall, you can actually buy a CD of the concert that you've just watched, and other similar types of business models. It's a multi-million dollar market. The bands are really rich. Some of them have private airplanes. So I'm not talking here about some sort of exotic, really niche market. This is something huge that is going on in Brazil. The other thing that might be familiar, even here in Germany, is about the baile funk scene. Baile funk is a rhythm that is taking place in the peripheries of Rio de Janeiro, in the marginalized areas of Rio de Janeiro. It's a very danceable, very booty, groovy, whatever, way of rhythm. The interesting thing about baile funk is that it's the same structure for a business as the Tecnobrega, but it's producing a symbolic change. This music that is being produced in the peripheries of Rio de Janeiro is making a symbolic movement, a symbolic impact in the world. Take, for instance, this singer, MIA or Mia. In this picture, she is headlining the Reading Festival in the UK, one of the largest festivals in Europe. And basically, her music is funk carioca. It's based on the same rhythm that is made in the marginalized poor areas of Rio de Janeiro. If you don't believe me, you go to Wikipedia. There's the entry for MIA about her most famous hit, and they say like she's sampling this famous funky carioca singer from Rio de Janeiro called Daisy Tigrona. And I swear to you, it was not me who edited that entry at Wikipedia. It was already there when I found it. Still, to make an assessment of the symbolic impact, take for instance this article written by The Guardian, the UK newspaper, which starts by saying that baile funk might be the most exciting music in the world. Music that is being made in the marginalized areas of Rio de Janeiro, creating this sort of global impact. Okay, so let me go really quick now. Let's talk about films for one more time. I told you that Brazil is releasing 51 films. The US releases approximately 611. That's the number of movies released by India. And on top of that comes Nigeria. Nigeria releases approximately 1,200 films per year. This is not my numbers. This is the numbers of the prestigious Carrier du Cinéma magazine, 2005. Films like O Sofia in London or O Sofia in London Part 2. The interesting thing about the Nigerian market is that it's completely sold through DVDs. The movies are directly made for the domestic market. So, for instance, Nigeria releases approximately 30 new titles per week. They have zero movie theaters. The movies cost approximately $3, and you can rent them for 50 cents. And they're generating approximately $200 million per year, making Nigeria the third largest movie industry in the world, right behind the United States, which is far away. Then you have India. Then you have Nigeria. People from Nigeria, it's so bad that Amaka is not here with us. They say that they are employing 150,000 people in the movie industry. So it's the second employment just after oil. So you have oil, and then you have the movie industry employing. The largest TV channel in Africa, that is called Africa Magic, only displays Nigerian movie, and it's the most watched satellite channel taking place in Africa right now. So this is a fascinating thing. Once again, the structure for selling is very similar to the one I described of the Tecnobrega and the Funky Carioca scene. Finally, I just would like to call your attention that this is a world thing. This is a global thing. It's not happening only in Brazil, Nigeria. This is not the exception. It's happening basically everywhere, even in the peripheries of the rich cities. For instance, the mixtape markets in London, the mixtape markets in New York, and maybe even in Berlin. I was in Egypt 1 week ago, and when I was talking there, I just realized that the same thing is happening in the Arab world, in which you have websites like Mazika.com, in which all the content is made available for free. And actually, I was always intrigued. Why would they make all the music like available for free? The same thing for this other website that is called SixArab.com. Huge amounts of music, contemporary music, really produced like now, being released, available for free online. And then I asked them, why are people making their music available online? Because the business model is completely different. For instance, this very famous artist, Raheb Alameh, as I was told to pronounce, is a very famous in the Arab world, and he makes money by playing in weddings. And he gets approximately $25,000 for playing a wedding, and sometimes he plays in two weddings at the same night. So he doesn't care at all that his music is made available for free. That's not his business. His business is not selling CDs. He actually loves the fact that he can be pirated and can have like his music distributed. So this is basically what's going on in developing countries. So when you think about Creative Commons, you have to think about the legal commons, and you have to think about also the social commons, because there are lessons that can be learned from each other. You can learn a lot about what's going on in these open business models from the social commons, and you can learn a lot about what's going on in the business models for the legal commons. Why am I talking all of this? Like, why is the social commons important? It's because the future of open business, the open business success, will be certainly linked about law, will be linked about enforcement, maybe, will be linked about morality, but it will be linked to something else that I already described before. And we, if you think about the Bill Clinton sentence, I think you have the answer about what is really determinant, really fundamental for the success of the open business model, and that's economy. And you are not stupid. Thank you. Okay, I'd like you please to bear with me, and I would like to introduce our next speaker, who is Roland Alton Scheidel. Roland is going to be talking about his project. He is a member of the Open Source Alliance, formerly known as Public Voice, and he's going to talk both about the business model of open source software and also the business model for open content. So please, Roland.
Thank you very much for this invitation. It's a pleasure to be here, pleasure to meet so many people which we have met in other relations. Open business is working. Open business is also working here in Europe, in Austria, and I will briefly go through four ideas and concepts where I have or had some relation with. You may know a number of such cases and projects. There is a wonderful website, openbusiness.org, where you can find also descriptions of businesses, and they usually, those descriptions are usually Creative Commons licensed. My first case is about an ecological power plant. Strom der Zukunft. This is a brochure of a non-profit organization which is trying to give those people who produce electricity a better rent on their investment. Imagine you have a house in the Alps with a lot of sun shining on your roof. Then you probably are think about producing your electricity yourself by putting solar panels on your roof. And the usual case is that you have to feed the electricity then to the network, and that you get paid some of the electricity what you have put into this public network. This is not a good business because you have invested more. And some people, and in Vorarlberg, the county where I live, many people would like to have a good conscience and say, I pay 1 or 2 or 3 cents more per kilowatt hour for my electricity, if I can be sure it is getting to this person or to that person who is running a solar energy plant or who is running a small water generator, which is economically not viable for the big industry, but they do it. So what this organization has done finally is they have set up a contract together with the producers, with the consumers, and with the regional network organization for currency, for this electricity. And so there is now a deal that they have to pay more. They make the controlling and the invoices, and the end users get finally the 3 more cents, which I want to pay to that person. This is so giving back, in fact, the consumers the right where to get the energy from and also to control it by market rules. And now this concept is written down in a contract. And this concept, others wanted to copy this concept, like in Salzburg, another county in Austria, or in Carinthia. And finally, what we did is we have put this contract under Creative Commons license. And 3 weeks ago, we got the agreement of the Federal Chancellery that this contract and the national organization is being funded, and they can now deploy this idea also in other counties based on a Creative Commons business idea. So this was number one. Number two is a magazine. This is a MediaBiz, a magazine for audio-video professionals in Austria. It's distributed for free. You get it into your postal mail, and they have advertisements about HDTV cameras and stuff like that. And then there was an article about TV alternatives, web and community TV. This was interesting to me. I was reading that, and I was reading it in the bus, and then I was reading the article about Octo TV, which was launched in November, a small TV station, which, by the way, also publishes all their content, Creative Commons. And then I thought, I know these sentences. I thought, oh, that was from my blog. I have written, when I launched the service, some lines about that. And then I thought, well, what should I do now? They have not mentioned my name. My blog is Creative Commons licensed, attribution share alike, and they didn't ask me. Well, usually they don't care. I'm happy that people know about this TV station. And then I thought, well, I should do something. And I have written a letter and an invoice. And they said, you have to pay a lot of money because you have infringed my rights. And this is the postal confirmation that I have sent this letter. 2 days later, I got a phone call from the journalist who said, oh, sorry, I was not aware of Creative Commons. And I said, okay, I tried to do something with your publishers. I will not threaten you as a journalist. And 1 day later, then the CEO of this magazine called me and said, okay, yes, it's their fault. I should make an offer. I also mentioned that we can probably arrange on something else or print 1,000 Creative Commons flyers. That's what I had in mind, or something else. And then I explained them the Creative Commons model. And they said, well, in fact, that's what we do. I mean, we distribute this magazine, and why shouldn't we become Creative Commons? And the next issue, you can read it here, is Creative Commons licensed. So that's a business model for them, still working using the Creative Commons model. But what could have happened when claiming my rights? They could have said, I have administration rights on that server. And they could have said, well, I have taken their words on my blog and I have changed the date. This is a typical problem we have been faced several times with requests from people who ask us, as I was involved together with Thomas, I'm happy he is here as well, the Creative Commons launch in Austria, what we should do in that case. And also people, the colleagues from Creative Commons in Switzerland have said, we would need some kind of registration agency. So if there is some work being valuable, then I would like to put it somewhere. There is an old trick, maybe you know it. So if you make a presentation as an agent at a company of the new design and the new logo for them, you never know if they don't have their cameras somewhere and then they say thank you for a presentation and then do it themselves. So the usual trick is that you put your presentation the day before in an envelope, you close it, and you send it to yourself. Then you have to postmark on it, and that's a proof where you can then say, I did it before you have seen that at that date. Or you can give it to a notary or a lawyer. It usually costs something. And so what we have been working the last weeks is on registered commons. Should be working. So, registered commons has. Let's see, it's working. It already changed the resolution. What we do with registered commons is we put digital timestamps. Timestamp. Yeah. Thank you.
Okay. Oops. Oops. Problem again. Sorry.
A digital timestamp on the document which you upload. You associate your name, and you can increase the level of trust if you use a CA Cert certificate. Then we exactly know who you are and who, when you have registered your work. And the digital timestamp is, digital timestamp is by a trusted third party, so it's from A Cert, which is a
big, right. It's working now.
Which is an organization who, under regulation, offers us this really secure and exact timestamps. And you will hear more about this later tonight when we launch the service. What we want to do is support the authors. I mentioned the case before. We certainly offer the CC licensing scheme. But we also want to offer that you can enter any kind of contract or license model which you want to apply. And also you can add moral rights. This is especially something which we have in Europe. Who has heard about moral rights? Who is aware of moral rights? Okay, some of you. In fact, independent of how you license your work, even if you give it away just under attribution conditions and tell everybody you can do what you want, if your work pops up in an environment which would really affect your personality sharply, then you can insist that they remove it. For example, if I'm a vegetarian and I really am an evangelist of vegetarian food, and it pops up in my photo which I put up on Flickr, is for meat production something industry, then I could say, okay, even if it's licensed attribution and commercial use, I feel infringed by that, and please remove that. And also you can add this, it's part of the copyright laws in Europe. And this has been discussed in the Creative Commons community 2 years ago on mailing lists, and I think there is also a working group, and here we allow that you just enter what you feel about your work and where it should not be published. Okay, so these are some, these were two added values which we offer. Now, what is the business model? It's here on the last lines. We will issue certificates on paper, so you, if you really have a big project and you want to be secure, then you can go to the shop and say, I want to have a certificate stamped and signed, and then we send it and we charge some fee for that. And we want that if a big organization wants to license more works, they need APIs, and then we make a bulk agreement, okay? So it's also like other search engines. If you really search a lot with Google, you will get the phone call by the sales person. And that will be the business model. Now, the fourth open business environment which is working is our cooperative. Our cooperative, which we started as Public Voice Lab. Public Voice Lab is running since 1994, so since 12 years. 2 weeks ago, we have renamed it to OS Alliance. OSAlliance.com is now the umbrella for open source developers to do bigger projects as they would be able to do if there are just one-person companies or a small company. And we have chosen as an organizational model cooperative. Cooperatives exist since 150 years. You have the laws in any country of the world. And in fact, it was a tool to give the producers a better organizational format in their hands. Typically, you have it with the agricultural industry, where farmers together found a cooperative. They bring their milk, and the cooperative makes the cheese and makes the delivery and the marketing for their products. And here we have the open source software developers. Well, it's a little bit more complex. We don't have only the producers in the cooperative as members, but also the users. So we also have radio stations as members to whom we provide services and software consulting, like the Stream on the Fly radio exchange network. How does it work? How does the business work here? So there is a developer X. This person may see a potential customer set and thinks, well, with my tiny website, and I probably won't get the contract. Then we go together, we explain the customer, okay, this is a cooperative. We charge from the very beginning, so we are not IBM who make pre-sales for half a year, make workshops not paid, but then charge 500 euros per hour. We say it's a honest business. We don't charge license costs, but we pay for, you have to pay from the first hour we are working together with you. And you will see very soon results because we do rapid prototyping. Usually the customer likes this idea. Sometimes it needs some convincing statements, especially if the customer asks, okay, then I pay money, and what then happens with the product which will result, and then we say, okay, it's GPL, it will go to the community again, but look, you get so much from the community, and we program your API to your SAP system, or reorganize your database. So that's what we do, and in fact, all what is going to the base system will go again to the community. And usually in such a project, you need more than one partner. There are other partners, E, F, and if the customer is not happy with F, then we take G, who probably has a better logo design than partner F. So in fact, in this business model, the project manager, who can be either X, the core partner, or somebody from the cooperative, is the project manager. And as a project manager, I'm a kind of a lawyer of the customer. I try to get the best result for him. Even if we write the invoice, I have a very friendly relation to the customer, because we both need to see that the things get done by the members of the cooperative. So this business model is working, at least in our area. We did also a research project where we have investigated that, why companies do not migrate and why the programmers don't get contracts. And the result was, we are too small. We are, and the other said, well, we need reliable partners. We need a one-stop shop. That's what we offer here. Okay. I have soon at the end. Okay, one more minute. I want to tell you here that this is usual sales business, what we have to do. So we have to approach customers, which may be organizations, and then we have a presentation like this. This is a presentation to a company in Venezuela. They asked us if we can help them to do the migration process. And then we tried to find the right partners. We are in a bigger project where we found partners in Spain, Extremadura. And then we have phone conferences, etc. We tell them about our expertise, about migration roadmap, what we would like to do with them, portals, telephony, migration to voice over IP, etc. Use asterisk, we tell them things about deployment cycle, so it rather looks like a presentation from some IBM salesman. That's sometimes like a feel. And then we try to get to sell a first workshop, and the next step is then have a proof of concept where we try already to get things working, and then we do further consulting and give them support together with our partners. Okay, so I hope I could give you some idea of how open business is working and how we do that. And I would be very happy if you would join the Registered Commons launch event, which will take place here at 10 o'clock. We have two musicians who will play a tune, the Tuxedo Blues. It will be really worth coming here and see that. Thank you.
Thank you, Roland. Our next presenter will be Danny Bruder. Danny is a musician, music producer, and free culture activist. He's going to talk about CopyCan, a project that allows sharing and musicians to get paid when they release their work.
Hi. Well, I'm a musician and a music producer, and I was a member of the GEMA for 15 years, but I had to quit my membership because I wanted to use free licenses, which the GEMA would not allow me, as they wouldn't allow it to anybody else. They have a monopoly in Germany. They want to keep it. They don't care about anything that you want as an artist because it works pretty good for them. So they told me that in the next 2 or 3 years they won't do anything about the situation, so if I want to use free licenses, I would just have to go. I did. So now I needed a concept how to publish my work and use free licenses and make it available to anybody. And I met a couple of guys who were really into that idea too. And we came up with a CopyCan. So let's look at the state of affairs in digital content. Digital content can be copied.
I think we have a problem with the image.
Yeah? Okay. Oh, okay.
You can maybe perform.
I composed it just now, actually. It's not working yet. How long?
It always happens with open business panels.
Okay.
It's unbelievable.
So, digital content can be copied infinitely, which is very good, because there won't be any artificial loss situation. That also means that once the first copy is out, millions of copies are out. So, the problem is, once I publish a copy of my work, how am I going to make money after that? Solution one could be digital rights management, DRM, also known as digital restrictions management, which does not work because I can copy anything that I like. And it's a hassle for the customer because, you know, you can only play your song so often and theoretically and can't copy it to another machine and so on and so on. So you don't want to use it. Solution two would be tracing, watermarking, etc. That means that files are directly linked to people. You got your files on a machine, so you got to trust your machine, your computer, not to share your files. Also, the buyer needs a strong ID, which might lead to central databases. I know a lot of people like central databases. Hands up, do you like central databases? I thought so. So solution three, law enforcement. So far, not very effective. And one question we got to ask ourselves is, do we want to put our kids to jail for sharing files? Is there an alternative? The Street Performer Protocol was invented by Bruce Schneier and John Kelsey, and is a great thing. So how does it work? For example, copycan.org. The author wants money for content. Publisher, in this case CopyCan, helps with the process. Author has a page on publisher's site, which looks very neat. Too bad you can't see it right now. Not yet. So then the author starts the project. The author makes a public promise for a price, saying for 100 euros I will release my next track, which is really fat. Then the author selects a license, for example, the Creative Commons by SA, share alike, you know. And then the author uploads a preview of his work, of course, so people can check out the track and see if they like it and if they want to spend any money on it.
Okay, it's working out.
Okay. So this will be the preview of a track called Runnin'. And then the author activates the project. After he activates the project, he can't make any changes anymore, so should be sure he wants that. So then the author, of course, advertises his product and the project on public mailing lists, on his website, or by mouth-to-mouth propaganda. Then we have the buyer. The buyer wants content. Give me all of that. So the buyer finds the project, and the buyer makes a payment. If he likes the project, of course. So that last set repeats, hopefully, until exactly enough money has arrived, which is a very good thing, because then the author uploads the final content and then gets paid. He's looking very happy right here. So everybody now can access the content, which is freely available under a free license. So what happens if not enough money comes together? Could be either route one, the author can still cash in, like he asked for 100 euros for a track, but he only gets 99.99. So he can say, okay, that's 1 cent less, I'll just publish it. Route two would be everybody gets their money back. Bad word, problems. Problem number one could be the publisher publishes early. That would be a great damage to the author since he's not going to get the amount of money that he asked for in the first place. That would require the publisher to actually have the content, which is not the case with CopyCan. Problem number two, the author does not publish. That will be a damage to the buyer, but of course, also, that will be a great damage to the author's reputation. Because if people pay for something you're not giving them, they're not going to like you. So problem number three could be that the publisher runs off with all the money. Like, obviously, you can do that exactly one time. Okay, all depends on reputation. And reputation requires identity. We have several approaches, like, for instance, OpenID. The experiences so far, let's look at Blender. Blender, the 3D software, got GPL, for $100,000. It worked. It was a one-time project. It worked. Let's look at freinutz.de. They're a German registered society, and according to them, it didn't take off because they took a 10% cut in the beginning, and they got pretty negative feedback on that issue from the community. Also, they mentioned they just didn't get enough content, which is too bad. So let's look at fundable.org. It takes a 7% cut, it's not aimed at free content. This is the place where you can fix your dog, like ask for money so you can go take your dog to the doctor, but we're like more focused on digital content. So it did take off, but not for free content. CopyCan.org will be open source. Great, isn't it? What does CopyCan mean? Well, obviously, anything you can't copy because it doesn't exist or it's not published is CopyCan'd. So anything that exists and is publicly available is CopyCan because you simply can copy it. So CopyCan.org, the website is in an alpha state right now. Will it take off? Well, it has for me because I'm using it. And I guess with your help, it will. Thank you.
Thank you, Danny, for giving us some extra minutes as well. The next presenter will be Lauren Kratz from Jamendo. He's going to explain his project. And also, it's worth mentioning that Lohan is a member of the Creative Commons Luxembourg.
So thank you, Ronaldo, for inviting me and for the PC also. So I will talk about Jamendo. Jamendo is based in Luxembourg. We are in the heart of the great Silicon Valley in Europe, because in Luxembourg you have iTunes Europe, you have AOL Europe, you have Skype, you have Amazon Europe. But we are really in Luxembourg. So we are really a startup based in Luxembourg, not only for the tax reasons. We were there before, so we are in Luxembourg. So what we do is mainly we started something to try to find, and we do not have already the receipt. We try to find a running business model on top of free content. And we started to do that with music. And it's growing well, but the receipt is still have to be tuned. And I will explain some of the tune we will do in the next months to have the machine working better. So Jamendo is also a team of various people, mainly in age also, because one of the founder, the main founder, is only 20, is a software developer, is also a great musician. I was a musician a long time ago, but I'm also a free software developer. I'm selling services in the Luxembourgish market for Linux skills. And the idea is really about finding the way to build a sustainable business model on top of free content, and for Jamendo on top of free music. So Jamendo, the top of the iceberg is a website where you can listen and share free music. It's unlimited, it's free, it's legal. And how we do that? We do that by using several tools. The first tool we talk a lot about here is Creative Commons, for sure. And the other tool is peer-to-peer technology. And the main idea was about a band near the Luxembourgish region which wanted to put itself volunteered in the Emule peer-to-peer network. So that what they was doing was really about having a PC always on in their basement, to have their demo CD to be found by everybody in the world using Emule. I probably just should ask, does everybody knows Emule here? Because when we talk about music, And when we talk about the biggest music platform in the world, there's no doubt it's EMU today. It's today, it's always 8 to 10 million users connected. So it's the biggest music platform in the world. So the idea was a band wanted to put himself volunteered in EMU. And he was doing that for no money in his basement. So what we've done with Jamendo is really do it this with a professional website, with a professional web farm, to do it right and do it for everybody for free. So when you get to the system, then you have a typical Web 2.0 hype things like Folksonomy, dig.com, real-time, a number of downloads, blah, blah. This slide, I made it this morning in the hotel room because we've just turned out of beta our German version today, just for the show. So you get to several tools to discover music. Today, I will show later on some statistics. There is some music coming from Germany, because if you look to the slide, well, it's a bit difficult to read, but you see that the five latest albums from today, because we are in a trend from 5 to 10 albums per day today. So you have France, Spain, France, Austria, and France again. So since we started first in French only, today 50% of the content is French. Okay. So when you find an album by genre, by tag, or whatever, you can then start to download it, and you have the right to choose today between two technology, which is either BitTorrent or Emule. Just some facts, today in the internet, 2/3 of the traffic is peer-to-peer, 2/3. And inside the 2/3, 50% of the traffic is BitTorrent. For sure, it's always, there's lots of traffic because the files are becoming big, but it's not marginal, okay? So for instance, you look here to a very good Belgian electro band, which is Silence. Yes. Strange name for a band, but it's very good music. In real time, you can see that, so I made the picture this morning, the album has been downloaded completely in BitTorrent 6,000 something of time. There is 31 active seeds inside the mesh, and there is 2 downloads going on. So as a business, our product services is we do distribution of Creative Commons licensed music, and we do it ad supported. The way we do it is when an artist uploads the music on the system, he accepts to allow us to do some kind of bannering on the website, and we do audio ads in the streamed preview. Okay, but we guarantee that the hi-fi version of the music, which is peer-to-peer, is ad-free. It's not our bandwidth. We do it using peer-to-peer technology, BitTorrent and Emule. We plan to do one point in time also Gnutella, because it's low cost distribution. Just for those that do not know, peer-to-peer is popular also because it's very efficient. It's a virtuous circle. The most an album is popular for us, the less it costs us to send it to the people. What we do also is filtering by social networking, so typically Folksonomy, tags, reviews, blogs entry, and so forth. And what we are building now, because of the demand, is software we will call, I don't know the final name, but internally we call it JamTap, music from the tap. It's a royalty clear point of music for commercial users in public spaces. Because we are entrepreneurs, free content deserves sustainable business model on top of it. And the idea is really to, as any business, to put supply and demand. So there's no problem with supply. Lot of bands want to put themselves for free in peer-to-peer network because there is their public is already there. The idea is really about finding new demand. So there is already a demand, but we were really surprised about all this collecting society stuff. Lots of restaurants, cafe, ask us, please help us to put this kind of music in the restaurants, in public spaces, even in waiting rooms or telephone music. So we have to build software to do it right at the very first time. Oops, wrong way. So as an artist, enter Jamendo, how does it work? Well, the artists download a small software for us, which is the Jam Loader. Basically, it's rip the CD to FLAC and bring the music up to our servers. Then it chooses one of the six core CC license. We support the six ones. And there is also the French version, which is a free art libre version. So there is seven options on Jamendo. And fans download the music using their favorite popular peer-to-peer tools, being eDonkey. I've heard eDonkey is dead yesterday, but or eMule or Amule or MLNet or whatever, or uTorrent. Or there's, okay, it will work with any of this. You don't have to install another tool. And then there's no DRM restriction fees. It's open. Let's use it. And then you share the music. We just added a blog option. So when you review the music on Jamendo, it will be both reviewed on your blog and on the review pages. So it's all about bypassing the intermediaries. So bypass the lawyer, use Creative Commons, and bypass the server, use peer-to-peer. So I've heard lots of story about free software, all the business model running on free software and free content. So there are analogy, but there are also difference. So I just made two slides to explain my feeling about that. So open source, Stallman, blah, blah, 85, 91, and we know now in 20 years that, well, Apache is 70% market share, Red Hat is running well, thank you for them. SUSE was sold to Novell. I don't know, IBM is doing lots of stuff with Eclipse and so forth. And Firefox market share is growing up. Okay, and if you go to Content World, I don't know if you've seen this guy in the corner, but if you should attend tonight to the 8 p.m. show because it's worth. So it's only since the beginning of the century that starting the analogy to the Content World, with the Creative Commons licenses. And today already, you have some, let's say, mainstream bands starting to test this. So it's going faster. It will probably not reach the same level of popularity than the free software at the same speed. I believe it will be faster. It's my bet as an entrepreneur. But what is different is with the music. First, John Buchman said that yesterday at the NetLabel. First of all, one main difference between music and software, that there are less derivative work in music. You know, patching and patching over for software is really natural. For music, one remix, two remix, it's huge, and it's not that often. The other difference also is the number of people able to write good software and the number of people playing music, it's not the same scale. Software is a niche in terms of inhabitants or population. But another trend, which is true, that I don't know if you know Gert Léonard, and you probably should read what he writes on the web. It's the concept music like water. The dam is broken. So music is changing from an economy of managed scarcity, it's the value, to an economy of abundance. Okay, so it's changing from inventory, CDs in racks, to a flow. It's changing, the scarcity is no more in the product, the scarcity is now in the consumer, in the ear. So if you get to the internet, you can have a look to what is attention economy. It's coming now. So we can see it's a bit the same in the free software. In the free software, the revenue changed from the licenses fee to the services fee. In the music, revenue changed from the product to the experience, to the show. And, I don't know if you go to the concert, but it's not only the euro, but now the price of the tickets is very high. One of the slides that always Gert Léonard is showing is Another fact is, with the cost of the disk, with the cost of the bandwidth, today is the day where every song ever made is available. So all the business model on top of the music has to be scratched and start again with a blank sheet, because that's new. Probably in 2020, it will be the same for the some economics say that for 100 euros, you will be able to store your entire life filming. What for? I don't know. But there some business model will arise with this kind of metrics. So there are some free music drivers. They are mainly the same that free software. First of all, mass amateurism. It's not about talent. It's also about price. Produce something which is good, now is going cheaper. You have this long tail stuff, so don't you can be the 10 copy star resistant. It's your grandma, your your brother. It's okay, you can do that. The marketing is going very cheap, with word of mouth being blogged, being seen in Boing Boing or whatever. So marketing is going cheap. And there is two actors, and the two are very important. It's the same for the free software. There is non-profit, like Creative Commons, Electric Frontier Foundation, Opsound, Archive.org, which is the biggest. And there is for-profit. We are. There is Magnatune yesterday. There is Lulu.com. There are others. And it's the same in the free software. In free software, you have, in one end, Debian, Gentoo, Ubuntu. On the other end, you have Red Hat, SUSE, Mandriva. So the success of the free software has to be credited to the two. Yeah? If you are in the business world, if a bank chooses to do some of its stuff in Red Hat, it's because of being support and blah, blah. Okay? And one important metric in terms of driver to free music is the bad guy. And it's the same for free software. One of the best sales guy of free software is Microsoft itself. If Microsoft wasn't there with their monopoly, probably free software will not have been such a huge success. So thankfully, in the music world, we have very good bad guys. So Record Industry Association, stupid trials, and blah, blah. So all this stuff are drivers. So just to finish with some figures. So today we are 1,500 complete albums. It's growing 5 to 10 per day, depending on the press coverage. And we are 35,000 registered users, growing 300 per day. And there are always between 500 and to 2,000 concurrent Beton downloads on the website, always. So it's translated in French, English, Spanish, and German today. And there is Czech and Portuguese going on. And it's already UHF-8, so we have can showcase some Japanese stuff. We have already two or three Japanese bands on the system. So we stream roughly 2 million songs per month. And since the beginning of the year, we distributed 700,000 albums, complete albums. We have a huge press coverage in France because of, don't know, but the way France put the UCD directive was awful. So we had a lot of TV exposure because we were explaining that there are always other ways to do it. So we are very well known on the creativecommons.org website. And in the blogosphere today is 5 to 10 entries in technology every day about Jamendo. I found this music very interesting and well. So I think I finished. Yes. Voilà.
Thank you, Laurent. Before I open the floor for questions, I just would like to make a quick question to Danny Bruder. From what Laurent said today and from what John Berman said yesterday about Magnatune, I think there is a possible open business model emerging in terms of innovating for license for public performance. For instance, take the example of Brazil or any other country. If you go to a hospital or to a concert house or to a shopping mall, they pay extremely high fees for the collective society, for instance, in Brazil. And from all that I understood yesterday from John Berman, he is kind of bypassing this model in the UK by licensing directly to these shopping malls, whatever, for a lower price, and like even sometimes you can get like very good content for it. Is there room for that, like in Germany, or like how do you feel about this from the CopyCam perspective?
Well, there might be room for stuff like this in other businesses than the music industry, but if you are a member of the GEMA, you are not in charge anymore of your licenses. They do it for you, and they decide how much they charge, and they're collecting the money, and they decide if they want to make a difference, which they don't. So basically, being a member there means that you gave up all the ability to make a choice.
Okay, so let's start with questions. Questions for the panel?
Yeah, hi, my name is Julian Finn. I have the question to Jamendo. Because you said your business model is to stream, obviously, some of the music, like internet radios. Is that the model, or more or less paid content for cafes and stuff? And that's what you were planning.
Right? Oh, yeah.
Yeah. The question was if you're planning to actually share the revenue with your artists.
Okay, so today I didn't mention about that. The way it's done, there is already revenues going to the artist on the platform, but it's based on gift economy. So today, you probably understood that we are coming from the software world. We've built a business model that is comparable to SourceForge. So instead of CVS, it's BitTorrent. But the idea is that every artist has a PayPal account, and you can pay on Jamendo, and more than 90% goes to the artist. Okay. And the revenue for advertising goes for us. But this business model is not very okay today. So we are changing that. Probably what we will do is to share the business model about advertising and use as a key repartition the number of donation in order to go to a virtuous circle, having more donation, splitting part of the revenue coming from the advertising. Still, we have to find, it's really a story about tuning. Afterwards, this JamTap software is really something we discover with the project, because I don't recall if I mentioned, it's running since 1 year and a half now. So the number of demands we receive with I'm a cafe, I want to put this kind of music just to bypass the collecting society, we have to do it right. And for sure, there will be a revenue share. And in terms of revenue sharing, we will have to do like any competing company to better than the collecting society. I don't know if it answers, but so we are building the offer. And it's really it's about software, but it's also doing right at the very beginning.
Hi, I actually have two questions, if that's legal. But because one relates to what you just said, can you say why you didn't choose a model, for instance, like Magnatune does, that people pay for CDs? Because with ads, it's, I'm just a bit confused, but I haven't had time to think about it. It seems, you're right, just a bit unfair to take all the ads and leave people with just, unless the relationships there are really good in favor of the artist, that people donate so much. But we heard yesterday it's 2.5% of people at Magnatune. Do you know how many it's at your site? How many people click PayPal?
Yes.
Not more or less.
More or less, yes. It's the ratio is 1 out of 3,000.
And the main question I'm interested in is for Ronaldo. When you speak about what you call social commons, actually the term is a bit, I would say, I think there's a problem that hides behind the term social commons, because when you describe that Egyptian artist, right, and you say he's actually excited to be kind of pirated, and I've heard these stories in Poland when I contact small alternative labels, which seem like good partners for Creative Commons, right? And I ask them, would they use licenses because they already put the stuff on the internet, and they say, no, we're excited about the act of piracy, you know? And so I'm thinking, do you have any comment on that? It seems that maybe Creative Commons licenses are then not needed, right? Which is, for us doing it, kind of a sad outcome. Also, when you see YouTube, you start thinking, you know, everything's now being made available somehow. No one's complaining from the copyright side. People publish their own content without thinking about licensing, and everyone's happy except us.
Thank you, Alec. Basically, your question is very good. What I try to describe by this social commons is a very blurry concept, in the sense that it's not black and white. When I mention like social commons, I'm referring to this sort of void that the absence of intellectual property creates, like in developing countries. It happens everywhere, and it happens even in developed countries. So the point is, there are businesses emerging from that void, businesses that have never considered any sort of intellectual property as part of their business model. And my point is, we should take a look at what's going on there and learn lessons from it, because some of the business that are taking place in this social commons environment can actually work very well in the legal commons environment. And your question is, so we don't need Creative Commons license for this social commons because, like, it's better to deal with piracy and, like, let's go ahead and pirate everything and that's it. The point is, the reasons for the emergence of the social commons, they are very particular. And especially when you think about the spreading of broadband in a country like Brazil or even in India, when you have broadband and you have like that kind of content, even like, for instance, the Nigerian films becoming available online, that's when you're going to need like a Creative Commons licenses. Because the way I see it, based on the Brazilian experience, and we are actually conducting a one-year research in Brazil about these emerging business models. This research is being funded by the IDRC, and there's a lot of data coming on, and when I see the data, I get more and more amazed about the possibilities about this. And based on that experience, when you have broadband being deployed in the developing countries, then Creative Commons has a role, because then you have to move away from the social commons environment, and you have to make it under the legal commons, but pay attention to that. Functionally, it will be just the same. But then you will need this legal statute in order to make it part of the formal economy, and especially to make it available like countrywide and eventually worldwide. So Creative Commons will play a role for the social commons in the future. It's just that now the idea is just like so foreign, and they just don't even consider intellectual property itself.
I have another question about licensing. I had a discussion yesterday with the people from Wikipedia, and they really hate the Creative Commons license, non-commercial Creative Commons license, because it poses a lot of problems. You can put a CD, for instance, in the magazine, or you can give away Wikipedia CD and sell it for, let's say, a little price, $3, and you can put it into Debian and so on and so on. Could you please say your opinion about this?
I agree. I'm also not very happy about the non-commercial definition in the licenses. I would, and there is some ongoing discussion. What I would prefer is to have make a difference between for-profit and non-profit. I think this would be more fair. In fact, if you do something, you have to pay finally your rent, you have to pay your network, and even if you are a non-profit organization, you do some commerce and you have to pay invoices. So we all have to do and deal with money. So I'm not talking about alternative currencies and talent systems, etc. This would be probably another case. For me, there is a difference between organizations who have to make profit, and the profit flows out from the community and the people who are the producers or the consumers. And that's why I also have tried several organizational models like limited company or non-profit labs and so on. Finally, we ended up with a cooperative. In the cooperative, the providers of the services and the consumers and even the employees are the members, the shareholders, and they steer the way which projects we do, and we're also the is at the end, that's the balance sheet, what is being invested with that. And it does not go out to a shareholder who is anonymous and who pressures us to make more and more profit. So I would rather a split here. I would still like to have a for-profit clause, but not a commercial or non-commercial clause. I think this would solve some of the problem, and then more people would probably move also your business model to something like that. I have a question. Do you have an investor in your company, and do you need to make profit so that after 3 years you can sell your company and your nice name and all the content is then belonging to somebody else?
Yes, it's an ugly guy, it's myself. Yes, there is an investor. Yes, I'm an entrepreneur. That, no doubt. So the idea is, it's not because there is business going on top of free content that it's not helping the cause. I'm convinced of the opposite. The success of free software is granted for Stallman, but is granted for Bob Jung also. Okay. So what we are trying to do is to find the model. So to answer the question about why we do not share that, we are thinking about it. We are building. We are at the very beginning of the story. And today, Jamendo is SourceForge. SourceForge, there is lots of ads about IBM or whatever on it. The guy which published something on SourceForge does not receive the money, but he can always put his PayPal button. We do the same. So today, Jamendo is SourceForge. Okay. It's not perfect. We are trying to change that. It's a long road. So back to the question about NC, not NC. Our idea was, let's the artist choose. So when the artist upload the music, he choose on the 6, because we do not want the sampling or the Developing Nation one, because it's too ugly to manage. So one of the 6. What are the statistics? Today, 70% of the artists choose NCSA, so non-commercial share alike. The other are using more gray light license, like Bayesa, for instance, or Arlib, which is nearly compliant with Bayesa. The other thing is that there is artists using the two. One album in NCSA, the other on Bayesa. Why not? There is also artists changing. First, they've made NC and D, and then, well, they try NCSA. Okay. I think that is the real freedom. I don't know if you were at the workshop before. I was there because Laurence Lessig was explaining some of the thing between, you know, incompatibilities. And it's really about, do not confuse your way of freedom, mainly coming from the free software world, and the way freedom is meant by the artist itself. Okay, probably not the same. So for us, it's okay. Yes, it's hard to handle. And yes, it will change. Function CC version 3 will come in, and we will have to do lots. But it's not the solution is not there. We are building the solution.
More questions?
It's a general issue. I get confused about this a lot, not being a lawyer, so maybe you can help. When you're a publisher and publishing content that, as far as I understand, belongs to the authors. So when they publish it under a license, you're also obliged to use the license. So for instance, don't you have a problem when you show ads on pages with non-commercial music under a non-commercial license?
No. Or, because, yes, could explain a bit little more. When the artist upload the music, he choose one of the six licenses, and he accept our general usage conditions for artists, which says basically, we do for you free hosting, peer-to-peer hosting, but you like an addendum. So Creative Commons, what is it? Is a contract between the public and the artist. But what does it say? You are not allowed to do a commercial exploitation of my artwork unless you ask me. And the deal between Jamendo and the artist, there is a deal between, which is, okay, what we do for free is hosting your content in peer-to-peer networks in a professional way, but you allow us to do ads in the website and in the stream music, because the preview stream is very costly. You can listen completely all the music. We have also radios based on tags, freely, but it costs a bone. But the music which is in higher quality, because the stream music is, 128 kilobytes. But the archived are both in OGG and in MP3 in a higher quality. And we guarantee, since it's not our bandwidth, that these archives are ad-free. So that's the deal. Another part of the contract between us and the artist is we ask you to use Creative Commons, but you have to understand and clear our responsibility that whenever you stop the service, because the service is non-exclusive and you can stop it by a simple click, that since we use peer-to-peer technology, we will instantly stop doing the tracker job and keeping at least one seed, but the other seeds, they are gone. So that's about responsibility. Okay. So there is a deal between the artists. We do not grab MP3 somewhere and start to build. So it's a volunteer action from the artist. Okay.
First of all, do you, Jamendo, do you link your artists to their own websites?
Yes, we do.
Right, so they can have their own commerce, whatever it is they want to do on their own websites, if that's what they want to do.
Yes.
Oh, that's good. Secondly, about MySpace, I think someone said, I believe MySpace are about to get sued by Universal.
Yes.
And I think it would be really a good idea if we somehow all joined them so that the smaller artists who aren't on a label get some of the money as well as the big labels. So I think that's an interesting issue for us all.
Lots of the band on Jamendo have also a MySpace page.
Yeah. So it would be great if we could all get some money when Universal sue MySpace rather than just Universal getting it. It's a point for us all, really. Mm-hmm. The last thing is that I'm really interested by what you're saying, Ronaldo, and I think that the issue of overseas that you're mentioning, I think the great danger is that someone like me, having heard your thing, would get on the next plane to Brazil, buy a lot of those CDs, which obviously some of them are damn good, and put them out here, have a huge hit, and no one will get a bean back in Brazil. I think that's a real danger, and I'm sure you're obviously aware of it, and it really worries me as to what might happen on that, because one thing is for sure, any dollars, pounds, or euros that got back to the barrios would probably extremely well, or the favelas, aren't they? Yes, sorry, would be very well appreciated.
I think that's a very good point, and it actually, when you have a state like that, These things actually have already happened. For instance, in the funk carioca scene, as you saw, that singer that lives in England, MIA, she actually literally got a part, like parts of the funk carioca songs and included in her CD. So it's there, like, and people started asking, like, did she pay any royalties? Did she pay anything? And she did not. So the press itself came to speak with this singer in Brazil, Daisy Tigrona, and asked her if she was, like, worried about this and she wanted to do anything about that. And she said, no, it's great. Like, now I can play funk carioca, and her career really got a boosted, really, including, like, in Brazil. She, like, became more famous than she was. So these things are happening, and the people in these emerging cultural industries, they are inside a culture of sharing. At the same time that they do not care that their music is being shared all over, they're appropriating music from other producers and other artists in order to make their own songs. So it's a remix culture put in practice. So the same way that they do not care that their music is shared and used by other people, they don't also have this idea of appropriation, that they are stealing things from other people. So it's a really interesting thing, and it's a social thing. That's why I call it social commons, because the reasons for that to happen are economic reasons, are cultural reasons, are geographic reasons. So it's really something that is happening in the ground. And my point is, we should not ignore it. Like, it's happening there. What's good that is coming out of it? In the other examples, there's a great example about this artist called Benegão. He's a part of the hip-hop scene in Brazil, who was there, like, at the Ice Summit, could see him playing live. And he actually posted all his content online, and his content was actually appropriated in Spain. Someone got his content and started to distribute it in Spain. He never did anything towards Spain or anything like that. And then he started to receive invitations by email to play in Spain. And at the first sight, he deleted all the invitations because he thought it was a joke. And he said, no, like, he just deleted the emails. And then when he realized that it was serious, he actually went to play in Spain, and there was like 4,000 people in the concert that he played in Madrid. And now he has a career in Europe. All these things happened like 3 years ago. And he'll be playing here in 1 week. He'll be playing, I think, at the Popcom. So he'll be in Europe as a result of like showcasing his work freely online for anyone to download and for anyone to appropriate and whatever it means. So these things happen, but the concern about it is really like irrelevant. People are really not worried about someone else going there and getting the content.
A question in the direction of Copycan and Jamendo. Basically, what you said, that your business model is based on Creative Commons, so basically that the content is actually freely available. But maybe not really fair, but in reality, for Copycan, the content is not available. The business model is to promise that you will make content available, but it's not, until somebody paid, it's not Creative Commons. For Jamendo, the trick why you can make money is because you have a special agreement that you don't have to apply to Creative Commons, to the special Creative Commons license that 75% or 77% of your contributors actually use. So what you both have is a system that actually does not work once Creative Commons is really applied. It only works before that.
Comments?
What?
If I'm thinking about a business model that I think is based on content licensed by Creative Commons, I'd expect that in theory, for example, somebody else could go on, take the same content, make a copy of your business model, because the model is free. Always the problem was, is it commercially available in the first place? But this would be my understanding of a business model based on Creative Commons. But nobody can actually copy your models, because the content is not free for anybody else but you. In your case, because the content is not in the open in the first place. In your case, because you have a special agreement with the artist. So it's not really Creative Commons. It's, you have a special deal, and after that, it becomes Creative Commons. Not?
No. No.
Well, CopyCAN is open source. You can build your own CopyCAN now. You mean, no, you have to get your own users that click an account and put in content, of course, because CopyCAN is just bits and bytes. It's data. It's information. It's free information. You can do it.
Could I just answer something of your question, right? There's a big difference, I think, not in this relationship to Creative Commons, but that CopyCAN's not actually a business model. The model isn't to insert yourself between the artists and the people who want to buy things, whereas, I mean, in an ideal situation, I think, where the artists can actually remunerate themselves for their own work based on a service ethic, which very much relates to the more kind of cooperative model that you were talking about. Something like Jamendo, with all respect, is totally irrelevant, and yeah. I kind of hope it will become irrelevant, because I can't actually see any case for it once you enter the zone of desirability, which is that everything's public domain, nobody has to like pay some gamer for their work, and people share things in the same way that it seems like we have to learn from people who didn't kind of start worrying about intellectual property yet. So, I mean, I'm amazed by the fact that all of these licensing structures seem like a way of trying to figure out what people who don't use intellectual property already know. And it's like the only way that you can figure it out is by dissecting it and, oh shit, we broke it while we were doing that. So, you know, it's like either an idealistic position where you just dispense with the whole rights issue, or a more pragmatic one, which maybe the Creative Commons tries to approach. But I think that the differences between these two models kind of highlights the fact that, neither approach really works.
Okay. First of all, about what I understood from the question, a Creative Commons license is a contract from the author with its public defining some rights that you don't have to ask to the author. It's a simplification. So when it's written non-commercial, it's not written non-commercial ever. It's written non-commercial unless you ask me. Okay? So what we do when we receive music, we ask, we make a deal with the guy. For us, because we are irrelevant, please help us be a successful irrelevant startup, and help us do some ads on the website to cover our costs. Okay, so about, I believe there is a room for free music, free gratis, okay, free music. There is room because with internet, with disintermediation, there is a room. It will not be all the music, but the balance will be more and more. So our bet as entrepreneurs is to say, well, today free music, the perception of free music with all these trials and so forth is 0%. Tomorrow it will be more. I have no crystal ball. I don't know how much it will be, but there will be room for that. And there will be some kind of successful business model on top of it. I don't know it will be us, but we are trying to do that, to find. So don't be afraid. Okay, so some music will be free. I mentioned that one of the guy within the team is 20. When we started the project, he was even 16. For them, it's an industry standard. It's a fact, music is free. So it's really a story about generation. My generation is the computer generation. His generation is about internet generation. So, okay. Please do read what has written Gert Léonard, Music Like Water. It's really okay. Something is happening.
Okay. I've got a question for Jamendo. At what point, how big is your concern that anybody can just upload any type of music, obscene or inappropriate, that then associates your company with the material that you allow being uploaded? Or, I mean, it's great that a million people can upload music, but at what point do you say, well, this is good, this is good music, and how do you distinguish from...
Okay, so that's a very good question, because in terms of liability, that's the nightmare. So what we do, first of all, we have the only, let's say, artistic or strong barrier we have in terms of content is the granularity we ask is an album. So you can't upload a straight MP3 to Jamendo. You have to have at least 4 songs in WAV format or in a physical CD and a cover. So this is the first barrier, because we do not get a contest of farts or whatever. We get really real music, first of all. Afterwards, once the music is uploaded, there is dialogue between the artist and the website asking which Creative Commons, allowing us to do some kind of advertisement. And then the system generates a tag, a set of tags, for sure the Creative Commons tags, but also a Jamendo tag that he has to put in his official website. And we have a bot which is controlling over and over again, including using Yahoo and Google search engine, because I don't know if you know, but there is specific searches in Yahoo and Google to be able to check that a specific website is under a Creative Commons licenses. So we do that as a control, first control, umbrella, cover your ass. Then, once the bot found the tags on the official artist website, the music is released to a happy few members of the community, the first mover, let's say, and they do some screening. And the idea is really, at the beginning of Jamendo, we were very frightened of having, let's say, homophobia or racism. Now it's 1,500 albums, and it happens only once. But one of 20, there are some really mistakes. Cover songs. People are uploading music because they've done their version of whatever, Satisfaction, and they believe they can do that. So we have to pull this out. And yes, if tomorrow somebody in India uploads his version of the most famous star of India, probably will not be able to find it. But the community is very, very proactive. When I say that there is 35,000 user register, we really receive very fast, hey, there is a problem with this song, please get rid. And we do the job. So that's why we are not increasing as fast as MySpace, because our job is distributing and filtering us and the community free content. So there is a matter of quality. Free music will be delivered if there is quality. What is doing a specific distribution for Linux, they do the quality testing. They choose this version Apache, this version of PHP. So that's what we are doing.
Okay, we are past our time, so I would like you to join me thanking our panelists. Thank you very much. It was very good.